This is Civilly Speaking, brought to you by the Ohio Association for Justice.
Hello and welcome to Civilly Speaking, OAJ's monthly podcast on practical and timely legal issues. I'm your host, Sean Harris. Our guest today is Sean Dominick with the firm of Dominick, Cunningham, and Whalen out of Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. And our topic today is medical malpractice and specifically cervical cancer cases. Sean Dominick, thanks very much for joining us here on Civilly Speaking.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
As a medical malpractice lawyer, tell us about cervical cancer and cases that you've been involved in.
Sure, happy to. About, 6 years ago, a client walked into my office telling me about how his wife had passed away from cervical cancer. They had two young girls, and they were trying to figure out how in the world this could have happened when she was having regular pap smears and they were coming back as being red normal, one as short as a month before she was diagnosed with cervical cancer. So we started digging into it, and we got the slides from the lab, LabCorp, where the pap smears had been reviewed, and we had them reviewed by our pathology experts. And lo and behold, not only had the slide a couple of months before she was diagnosed been misread as normal when actually it had shards of cancer on it, the slide from 2 years previously had been misread. And the slide from 2 years previously had been misread at a time where everybody agreed that proper treatment would have saved her life.
It's hard to believe. How could it be so clear to one set and not another? How'd that happen?
Well, it's a story as old as time, right? It is corporations putting profits ahead of patients. And what we learned during the course of that case, and we've learned through other cases, is that they're forcing the folks who read the slides, the cytotechnologists, to read too many slides in a day, and they can't possibly pick up the abnormalities on all of the slides. And what I believe is that the industry is gambling that most women don't have cervical cancer. Those that do have cervical cancer, it is slow growing. There's actually a precursor non-cancerous lesion that then turns into cancer and becomes invasive. That takes a period of years. So they figure, oh, if we miss it this year, that's okay. We'll grab it in a couple of years and everything's good and nobody's the wiser.
Any sense on how many cases go misdiagnosed?
Well, there are 4,000 women a year that are dying from cervical cancer in the United States, about 10,000 new cases of cervical cancer that are diagnosed every year. And I believe that for women who are getting regular pap smears that are interpreted as normal, that are then diagnosed as having cervical cancer, that the vast majority of them probably have a misread pap smear in the past. And one of the things that's insidious on top of what we've already talked about is when there is a diagnosis of a high-grade abnormal lesion or cancer, the lab is required to do what's called a five-year look-back. That is, look at the last 5 years of slides to see whether or not the lab misread one. But what is the lab not required to do? If they find that they've misread one 2, 3, 4 years ago, they're not required to tell the patient unless that will somehow affect the current treatment, which it never will, because they've already been diagnosed with cancer. So they know that they missed it, and they don't tell the patient, and they're not required to.
I take it that's discoverable.
It is, but they fight it. And I mean, we know how hard it is to get the truth from corporations. I've been working at the federal level with senators and congresspeople to try and see if we can't get some laws that recognize what's going on. It's difficult in this environment.
Now, in the introduction, we said you're from Florida, but of course you practice all around the country, including here in Ohio. Have you been involved with cases in Ohio?
I have. In fact, I just finished two cases here in Columbus. Both of them were against LabCorp. It is just coincidental that I had two cases that were here, but both of them were very sad cases. One woman who was in her late 30s, another who was in her mid 40s, both leaving behind a husband and three children. And, you know, death by cancer, particularly cervical cancer, is devastating on the family to watch their loved one go through that process.
I take it there aren't signs or symptoms outwardly other than, I mean, pap smear is the only diagnosis.
Yeah, well, pap smear gives you, is the frontline test. If there are abnormalities on the pap smear, then you go up to a pathologist, then they go on and they do biopsies and some other testing that needs to be done. So it's the frontline that starts you down the path to getting the correct diagnosis. It's there. Usually, when somebody has cancer, as it starts to progress, you'll see abnormal bleeding, other pain during intercourse, things like that. But by the time those symptoms are showing up, you've already got the disease. So that's why getting these pap smears and getting them read properly in a timely basis is so important.
Now, I understand from a legal perspective that one of your cases in Columbus involved the distinction between medical negligence and general negligence.
It did.
Which is odd. That's right. I mean, in my mind, I think, well, clearly this is medical negligence.
Right. But, you know, in Ohio, you have a very strict statutory construction of what it is that is a medical claim and what is not. It became important in our case because of statute of limitations issues and things like that as to whether or not it was a general negligence claim versus a medical negligence claim. And both of the judges that addressed the issue determined it was a general negligence claim.
Wow. That reading a pap smear is not right. Practice of medicine.
It's not, because the folks who read it, the cytotechnologists, they generally have a biology degree and then some cytotechnology training that goes along with it, but they are not medical providers. In fact, in a lot of states, and I don't remember about Ohio, they're not even required to be licensed.
My goodness. Well, not only statute of limitations, but in Ohio, it's a different cap.
Right. Exactly.
That's fast. I never would have guessed that.
Right. So that became an important issue for us.
So if, and I think you said earlier, 4,000 women are dying each year from this form of cancer that's, as you say, largely preventable. Well, what are we doing about this? How can we stop this?
The first way that we can stop it is corporations aren't going to change on their own. We know that, right? So what are the two ways that we can change them? We can either try and get it changed legislatively and have rules that are there to try and change this. I'm working on it, but that's a slow process sometimes. The litigation, I think, helps. If we force them enough times and juries say to them enough times that you need to change your behavior, then hopefully we'll get changed behavior with regard to that. And the other is women need to take control of their health care. Let me repeat that. Women need to take control of their health care. For far too long, they've gotten the short end of the stick, whether it's being given drugs that were tested on men and, oh, but we're going to go ahead and use them on women, or whether it's what's happening here in the pap smear industry, where they're not throwing enough resources at the testing that needs to be done. Women need to know where it is that their slides are being sent off to. They need to talk about ask about the error rates. And in my experience, I find that hospital-based pathology departments typically review far fewer slides in a day than the big box labs do. If it were me, I would say to my doctor, let's make sure that we have this reviewed at a lab that isn't reviewing too many slides in a day.
And when we're talking about kind of the greater societal timing, I mean, here we are in the midst of the Me Too movement, the Women's March. Is women's health and issues like this, I mean, is it time for some kind of federal legislation?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're working on that at the national level with the AHA. I'm running for parliamentarian of the AHA this summer in Denver. And one of the issues that I've been fighting on personally in my practice and globally in terms of with legislative change is these women's issues and in particular women's health issues. The time is right now for us to be heard about it. Women, you know, women have marched for a lot of things. I'd like to see march for healthcare rights.
And politics obviously can make strange bedfellows, but do you have any sense of what the appetite for something like this in the Congress would be these days?
Right now, I think that trying to get anything through Congress is very difficult. And certainly between now and November, with the election coming up, I don't see anything like this that's going to make movement through there. But it doesn't mean that we can't be and we shouldn't be laying the foundation with it. This is not a Democratic issue. It is not a Republican issue. It's not even a woman's issue. It is a human issue. When our spouses, when our mothers, when our sisters, when our daughters are dying needlessly, that affects all of us, and we all need to stand up.
Sean Dominick, thanks very much for joining us here on Civilly Speaking.
Thanks for having me.